How we got our Bible chapter 13, page 4. The English Bible. John Wycliffe, 1329-1384, was the most eminent Oxford theologian of his day. He viewed the words of the Bible itself as more important than papal authority, and he and his associates were the first to translate the entire Bible from Latin into English by 1382. 3 decades after his death, his writings were officially banned, and the Pope had his remains exhumed and burned in 1428. In 1525, Desiderius Erasmus, best known as Erasmus of Rotterdam 1466-1536, updated the Latin version of the New Testament. For unknown reasons, he translated a full Greek version, at the same time, producing a Greek-Latin parallel New Testament pulled together from the Greek New Testament documents available at that time. Most of these were copies from Byzantium, and not especially ancient in themselves, but they were respected as faithful transcriptions. He also used the Latin Vulgate and quotations from the early church fathers in producing his Greek manuscript, picking and choosing whether to use the Byzantium text or the Latin text and the wording of the church fathers. How we got our Bible. This was not illegitimate, since Jerome and the church fathers themselves had used very early manuscripts. His Greek texts were missing the last 6 verses of Revelation, for instance, so Erasmus was forced to back-translate the Latin into Greek. Erasmus continued to update this Greek and Latin Bible, and his 5th edition did away with the Latin column entirely. This final version was used as a basis for the official Textus Receptus, the Greek edition, that became the primary text for translations, like the King James Version. Mr. How We Got Our Bible, Chapter 13, page 5. About the same time that Erasmus was doing his work, William Tyndale, 1494-1536, translated the Bible to English, like Wycliffe had done, but he used the available Greek and Hebrew texts rather than the Latin. Tyndale had graduated in 1515 from Oxford, where he'd studied Greek and Hebrew. He was a genius at languages, and became fluent in 8 of them. He committed his life to translating the Bible from its original languages into English for the common man, and in 1526, Tyndale made use of the Gutenberg printing press to become the first person to print the New Testament in English. Tyndale's translation earned him the title Architect of the English language because he coined many terms familiar to us today. Idioms like twinkling of an eye and signs of the times and scapegoat entered into English through his translation. He improved on later Bible editions with beautiful illustrations. The English Bible. Yet, because he came against the authority of the Church of England, Tyndale's version of the Bible didn't sit well with King Henry VIII, and was banned. Tyndale went into hiding in Germany, visiting Martin Luther, in 1525, and there he worked to translate the Old Testament. He was eventually betrayed by his friend Henry Phillips, and in 1536 Tyndale was burned at the stake. Tyndale was only able to finish the New Testament and about half the Old Testament before he died, but in 1537, Tyndale's friend John Rogers produced an entire English Bible, complete with both Old and New Testaments. Rogers published the Matthew Tyndale Bible from Tyndale's notes, using the pseudonym Thomas Matthew. Tyndale's last words at the stake were said to be, "Lord, Open the King of England's eyes. 68. His prayers appeared to be answered within a few years. Henry VIII soon authorized the Church of England to produce an official English Bible. The Bishop of Exeter, Miles Coverdale, finished William Tyndale's version and produced the Coverdale Bible. He was also involved in a complete Bible published in 1539, called the Great Bible, because it was large and very expensive. Coverdale edited the portions that the Crown had found objectionable in Tyndale's translation, but Coverdale didn't read Greek, so he had to fill in missing portions of Tyndale's work with translations into English from the German and Latin. How we got our Bible. There followed a series of English Bibles. The Geneva Bible was produced by Protestants who fled to Geneva, Switzerland, during the reign of Queen Mary. It was finished by 1560, but the full Old and New Testaments were not published until 1576. This was the Bible used by Shakespeare and carried to America on the Mayflower. The authorities of the Church of England took issue with the clear Calvinism of the Geneva Bible. In response, they fixed problems with the Great Bible in what came to be called the Bishop's Bible, publishing it for respectable Anglicans in 1568. The Roman Catholic Church also produced an English Bible between 1582 and 1610. Rather than returning to the original Greek and Hebrew, the Douay Rheims Bible was translated from the Latin Vulgate as a means of upholding the authority of the Roman Catholic Church in the face of the Protestant Reformation. Mr. How We Got Our Bible, Chapters 13, page 6. The King James Version. In 1611, the King James Version of the Bible was completed. James XI of Scotland became the King of England and adopted the name James I. He commissioned 47 scholars to go back to the original Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic texts, and the English Bible. Translate the Bible with excellence in a manner that would uphold the ecclesiology and structure of the Church of England. The best translators were employed, and prayerfully they set to work, taking advantage of more than 5,556 manuscripts. The result was a crowning achievement of scholarship and beauty. The title of the first edition declared the Holy Bible, containing the Old Testament and the New, newly translated, out of the original tongues, and with the former translations diligently compared and revised by His Majesty's special commandment. All the manuscripts that were available during those days were at the disposal of these scholars, but they primarily relied on the Textus Receptus, the Greek text put together largely by Erasmus of Rotterdam. The document they developed, the King James Version, is, to this day, recognized by most as the noblest monument of English prose. Modern translations may be more readable to our contemporary eyes, but none enjoy the majesty or the veneration of the King James Version. In short, there were 9 different English versions of the New Testament produced over the course of 230 years, as well as Luther's German Bible and the Erasmus Greek text. How We Got Our Bible. 1382 Wycliffe Bible from the Vulgate. 1525 Erasmus New Testament. Basis for Textus Receptus. 1526 Tyndale Bible, First English New Testament. 1534 Luther's Bible, First German Bible. 1535 Coverdale's Bible, First Complete English Bible. 1537 Matthew's Bible from Tyndale's Notes. 1539 Great Bible Coverdale's Revision. 1560 Geneva Bible Protestant/Calvinist. 1568 Bishop's Bible Revised Great Bible. 1609 Dow A. Rheims Bible Vulgate Catholic Translation. 1611 King James Version. Westcott and Hort. We find that the tides will wax and wane in every area of research. The same is true for biblical scholarship. It became popular to disparage the Textus Receptus during the 19th century, while law veneration turned to the three Alexandrian codices. Scholars noted that the recently discovered codices were the oldest complete manuscripts, and argued that we should rely on them and less on Textus Receptus. Mr. How We Got Our Bible, Chapter 13, Page 7. The trouble began in the 18th century with Johann Albrecht Bengel. In the 1730s, Bengel produced a text that deviated from the Textus Receptus while relying on earlier manuscripts. In typical German style, he believed that the harder readings should be preferred. He was followed by Johann Jakob Griesbach, 1745-1812, who published several editions of the New Testament. Griesbach developed 15 rules for determining which manuscripts were best to use, including lectio, brevier, preferenda, meaning the shorter reading is better. It was thought that copyists were more likely to add their ideas to manuscripts than to remove verses, which was fairly short-sighted. In 1831, Karl Lachmann produced a text that represented the 4th century Alexandrian codices. And then Samuel Trigels, who was self-taught in Latin, Hebrew, and Greek, published a text in 6 parts from 1857 to 1872. The English Bible. Finally, Brooke Foss Westcott and Fenton John Anthony Hort came along. Westcott and Hort were two Anglican churchmen who had contempt for the Textus Receptus, even though it had been the basis for their own King James Bible. Based on what we now regard as the corrupt Vaticanus and Sinaiticus documents, these two men began a work in 1853 that 28 years later resulted in a Greek New Testament. This effort undoubtedly took additional time for the simple reason that they had to reconcile all the differences found between Vaticanus and Sinaiticus. In his book Codex B and its Allies, H.C. Hoskier documents 3,036 variations between these two manuscripts in just the four Gospels alone. It is a mystery why these men held the corrupted Alexandrian codices in such high regard. We do know, however, that both men were involved in the occult at points in their lives and questioned many tenets of biblical Christianity. Both of these men were influenced by Origen and others, who denied the unique position of Jesus Christ and embraced the prevalent Gnostic heresies. In college, they founded at least two occultic secret societies, the Hermes Club and the Ghostly Guild. The latter was concerned with the existence of spiritual entities, as its ghostly circular states, serious and earnest inquiry into the nature of the phenomena which are vaguely called supernatural, will scarcely be questioned. How We Got Our Bible. The particular beliefs of Westcott and Hort do matter a great deal, because their own brands of faith went into the specific choices of words they used in their final Greek text. These men do sound like Orthodox Christians at times. Speaking of the deity of Christ, or forgiveness of sins, the resurrection, or the ascension. These can be seen first in the open rejection of the history in the Bible, preferring allegorical interpretations of such things as the creation and the fall. When they speak of the resurrection and the ascension, they mean different things by these words, and a straightforward literal interpretation. There is a twisting of ideas that goes on in their writings that indicate they don't believe much of it to be literally true. The dismissal of sound doctrine is more subtly seen in strange views on such things as the fatherhood of God and the substitution of Christ to pay for sins. The English Bible, 121. How we got our Bible. End of chapter 13.